episode of King Alfred's Diary. Today we are talking about, in the spirit of St. Patrick's Day, Irish immigration to this area. And I'm joined here today by my sister, Emily Sexsmith, and the wonderful archivist, Miss... I'm blanking. I'm so sorry.
Hi guys, this is Lori Lasperian.
Lori Lasperian.
She knows my name. She absolutely does. She's just on the spot.
I wanted to call you Lindsay. I'm so sorry.
not a problem. I can be Lindsay today, but I'm actually Lori usually.
Lori. Okay, so all of us have connections to like families that like consider themselves Irish because like we're all from this area. Me and Emma are from Hornell.
And I'm from Greenwood, so not too far away.
I'm so sorry. She's from Greenwood, and yes, so me and Em, our family, the Sexton family goes back far, and we know and have traced back to our great-great-great-great-grandfather who came over originally from Ireland in the 1860s, and our family is very proud to have Irish roots, and we were just talking, and your husband has a similar kind of family?
Yeah, so last name Meehan is definitely an Irish name, and his family, similarly, in the early 1850s came from Ireland. And we have in our living room the trunk, that his great-great-great-grandmother brought on her passage over. So it's pretty neat.
That's really cool. That's so cool. Yes, and a lot of people in this area specifically have similar stories. Like in Hornell, like St. Patrick's Day is a huge deal. We've got a parade going. There's a lot of drinking everywhere. Most of the families.
The Irish Fest in August.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and the Order of Hibernians.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You can join if you have the Irish ancestry. Mm-hmm. Over in Wellswell is the Emerald Hook and Ladder Company. You have to be Irish in order to be a member of that fire company.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Wellsville's got, they had at one point four different fire companies, but Emerald Hook and Ladder, you know, so their trucks are green, you know, for the Irish.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, there really is a lot of Irish history. Hornell's history really traces back to the railroad, because Hornell was such a railroad town.
Yeah.
And the Irish built the Erie Railroad. Of course, they didn't finance it, but they were the laborers that built the Erie Railroad. And then with Hornell being such the center of rail activity, many of the Irish stayed to work on the railroad.
Yeah, and actually our great-great-great-great-grandfather, or maybe it's only three greats, actually he was a railroad conductor.
Oh, neat.
For 30 years. That's what the newspapers say. Yeah. Would you say that there are any Irish connections to Alfred, New York? Going back to the immigration.
Our strongest one is definitely during the construction of the Erie Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1850, the Erie Railroad construction started in the New York City area. And so the line that comes through Alfred started in New York City, ended in Chicago. And so, of course, it took a number of years to do all of the very manual labor, to hand dig, to dynamite, to construct. It was horrible working conditions. And similar to the construction of the canals, they were done with immigrant labor. So the railroads on the eastern coast, eastern seaboard, were primarily built with Irish laborers and some Germans as well, but predominantly Irish. And then on the West Coast, they were built mostly with Asian, particularly Chinese, just because it's, of course, a shorter trip for them to get to the West Coast.
Yeah.
So it was huge for our country to have, finally, the transportation that the railroads allowed. But a really important part of the story is to think about the people who literally built the railroads. So in 1850... the section through Alfred on the Erie Railroad was being built. It had been completed up through Hornell, came through Almond, Alfred, went on to Andover, and then through the rest of Allegheny County to continue out west. So yeah, our biggest, I think, story for Alfred related to immigration, it would be in 1850.
Mm. And what happened in 1850 that we know of?
So when we look at the census, there's a lot of information we can learn from the census records, and it's just fortunate that 1850 is the year that the federal census was done, and it was the year that the highest concentration of Irish were in Alfred. And so Alfred Station is where it's called Alfred Station because the train station was there. And that's where, of course, the rail line, which is still there, runs through the town of Alfred. And in 1850, the population, total population of Alfred was 2,006. Oh, wait. Sorry. Total population was 2,679 people. Maybe about half of what we are now. The town of Alfred, I think, runs about 5,000 people today, total. So we can't think of just a village, right, the entire town.
Would that be including the college's population? Or?
Well, for those students who were counted, the census gets really weird with the students, you know, because sometimes you're counted in your home count, and sometimes you're counted in the school's count. It gets a little weird.
That's
Yeah. So, you know, just under 2,700 total population in Alfred in 1850. But out of those, so 22% of those were Irish, which is a really high percentage.
Yeah.
So there are 590 Irish born in Alfred in 1850. And so at first you're like, oh my gosh, there's 600 people, you know, and born in Alfred in 1850, born in Ireland. Like, wow. Well, they were living in Alfred Station in basically a shanty town because they were there to work on the railroad. And it wasn't just 600 men. There are only half of those were men because they also brought their wives and their children with them. And they had children between the time they arrived and even this point. So many of the Irish, of course, we know that the Irish high percentage of them, the peak of their immigration, came during the potato famine and all the problems in Ireland. But many Irish were here before that. They had come in to help build the canals in the 1820s, but it certainly peaked in the late 1840s and then into the early 1850s. So many of them, the main ports were New York City and Philadelphia in the United States. But many of them also went into Canada because it was cheaper. Passage was cheaper for them to go into Canada. And so when you know little bits and pieces of their immigration story, when you look at the census records, so like when we look at the Alfred census, like there's a child, you know, the parents are Irish born, and they have a child who is born in Canada, and then they have a child who's born in maybe northern New York and a child born in Alfred. And you can just from that tell that, oh, well, they were one that came into Canada first, and then they worked their way down into the United States. There's a couple of children you can see in the census that were born at sea.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so put yourself in the position of that mother, right? You're pregnant. You're putting yourself on what they call them coffin ships because they were small and so many people died on the passage. But my choice is that I have a better chance of surviving getting on this ship for 6 weeks, knowing that who knows what the conditions are going to be for the sea, for the weather, food. You get a lot of, you know, sickness because of the water. And then to deliver a child in 1850 on a little ship in the middle of the ocean. That's what I like to think about, is to really think about people's lives, build, you know, the actual work to build the railroads. So anyway, so in 1850, we had almost 600 people Irish born. 130 of them were children. So where did they go to school? You know, where did they get their food? How do they prepare their food? What was sanitation conditions like? All those kind of questions pop up. And so out of that, there's a folklore story in 1850. And I have about six different versions of it.
Mm.
So I think something happened.
Probably.
But.
Yeah.
But exactly what happened is yet to be known. I haven't yet found like a primary source, like a newspaper account of it or someone's diary that talks about it. And so I brought, so in 1928, a story was in the Fiat Lux, and the title of it says, Alfred takes a hand in quelling civil war between the Sons of Erin during the building of the present Erie Railroad. And so in 1928, an alum had come back to campus, Horace Crandall, who was, so I can verify that Horace Crandall was a student at Alfred in 1850. So like, okay. So okay. There's, gives you a little bit of hope that there's a nugget of truth, you know, that something happened. And so he described it that, let's see, a camp of Irishmen. So they, of course, like you have to get an Irish history as well, like the Protestants and the Catholics. And so disagreements between Protestant Irish and Catholic Irish. They didn't just, you know, come to the United States and like, okay, you know, we forget all of that. So they bring those things with them. The Irish had a lot against them, you know, being the immigrants, being Irish immigrants, their religion, their politics. They were just scorned very much. I mean, there were signs in windows that would say no Irish need apply.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
People were
yeah.
looking for jobs. This is sort of after this time period, but and so this story in the Fialuch says, it seems that the Erie Railroad was just being built. In those days, railroad construction gangs consisted principally of Irishmen. Okay, and I'm also going to just forefront this by, so this is 1928 language, so I apologize if there's language or a way something's described that is not how we would appropriately talk about it today, but I just will read the section. Just want to, like, we have to think that in historical context, because sometimes we cringe when we see
mm-hmm.
how things were described.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the advance guard of 1,000 pick wielders was no exception to the rule. A camp of Irishmen, one must know, is a latent battery of dynamite. Right? That's a reference to their, you know, their supposed character, their differences between being Protestant and Catholic, their reputation for being heavy drinkers and brawlers. And so this writer, you know, is saying that they are just, they're ready to explode anyway. This is true now as ever. Worse yet, it seems that part of the gang were from the County Cork, while part was from the Downs. What could be more inevitable? Surely enough, either from geographical differences or because of natural pugnacity, excuse me, the two factions engaged in an embryonic scrap, which soon developed into a regular, I'm not going to say this word right, shalala fight, direct from the old country. In a terrible fracas, two men were killed while several others were badly wounded. This is the only version of the story that mentions that somebody actually maybe got killed.
Mm-hmm.
Students of Alfred were then called upon to quell the riot. The stalwarts of Alfred, armed with all sorts of weapons, from horse pistols to horse whips, descended upon the embattled Sons of Erin, and in a very short time had the situation well in hand. About a dozen of the ringleaders were arrested and confined to the Alfred jail. A mob of rescuers gathered near Alfred Station and marched in force to the jail with the firm intention of liberating their incarcerated brethren. However, at the sight of an armed student guard placed around the prison, they decided to live and fight another day. Such was the intimidating force of Alfred's students of yore.
That's really interesting.
So I don't know, like, where the Alfred jail was yet, even. This makes it seem like it was in the Alfred Station area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, a question I have. You know, like, well, hey, well, where's the Alfred jail? How many people could it have hold? This makes it sound like, you know, they put 100 people in it. I have no idea. But that's what, when I read stories like that, these are the questions that, you know, I want to know. Like, okay, what's the truth in this? Another version, the other versions have an Irish mob marching into Alfred and being met with a cannon at a couple of different places that used to be taverns. And so we have... Could have been here, could have been there, not sure. One story specifically mentions that this happened in June of 1850. So that's helpful if I can, you know, find primary sources to maybe start my search in June for something. I did find another story in June, though, of 1850 from a newspaper, the Sabbath Recorder. The Sabbath Recorder is the newspaper for the Seventh-day Baptist Church because much of Alfred was settled by people who belonged to the Seventh-day Baptist Church.
Hmm.
So the Sabbath Recorder says that in July of 1850, a Catholic priest passed up the line of the railroad through Alfred, visiting the Catholic Irish, and finding one of them in a grocery selling liquor, ordered him to abandon the traffic. A few days after, the priest came along again, finding the man still selling liquor, took an axe and knocked in the heads and let the liquor out of every barrel in the shop. The Irishman showed some resistance to the priest's movements, for which the priest gave him a smart horsewhipping, telling him during the flogging to keep cool. Keep perfectly cool. So, right? So, like, we would never write stories like this today. So, like, even reading stories and how they're told in older newspapers is interesting in and of itself. You know, and so, like, so here is a story reported at the time that this happened. So, like, is this the impetus and, like, a greater story grew from it? You know, why did this newspaper not report something a month earlier that sounds like it was even worse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really interesting, though. And you never know, like, what is just, like, you know, a game of telephone. Like, this person hears that, then it turns into that. Yeah. I don't see how something like that could turn into what that alum was describing with, like...
It does seem like a stretch.
Students taking up arms.
Yeah.
So one of the other stories actually mentions an Irishman by last name, so last name Pardon, that somehow he was either the instigator or he did something and a lot of the anger was focused on him.
Mm.
And so there is an Edward Pardon in the 1850 census. So there is one... just one person, Irish born with the last name Pardon in 1850. So it's like, okay. So then how does this, where did this other story get there? Because this other story was written in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So where did that author get their story to say that it was in June of 1850 and it involved this guy named Pardon? So there's a lot of research that still needs to be done, but something happened. And then there's another story... oral history, right? We all, you know, hopefully have some stories that were passed down through the generations from our family that we maybe know a little bit of something of, at least our parents' youth, maybe our grandparents. And so another gentleman wrote a story passed down through him, and his family had a house just a little bit further down the line toward Andover. So if anybody's in Alfred and you go to the top of Jericho Hill, where they're going to build it, at the top is where the new Saxon Hill complex is going to be.
Yeah.
And then you take a left-hand turn on Kenyon Road. And if you drive Kenyon to the bottom, you run into Route 21, which is the road that runs between Alfred Station and Andover. And he has an oral history story passed down from his grandparents of course, like, you know, they finished building the section in Alfred Station and they just, you know, keep on going down, and the railroad is right in front of this particular farmhouse that that there was a skirmish between the Protestants and the Irish in the, you know, heat of the summer, and whether they had been drinking or not, I don't know, but the grandmother recognized what was happening. She came out with a shotgun and, you know, basically said, you know, stop. And so she did a little bit of protection with her shotgun. And he also said that then a little bit further down that some Irish, because Irish, absolutely, they died on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Hard work,
horrible working conditions. You're sick, you know, you get dysentery, from all sorts of intestinal issues, you know, from bacteria and water, may not be well fed. Lots of things. We didn't have safe working conditions. They didn't have protective gear. And the stories are that along the entire railroad, that many of them are just basically buried on the spot.
Mm.
And so this particular family story is that there were some Irish that died, and they were buried a little bit further down. But then at some point, they're moved to the cemetery on this family farm, and there is a cemetery in this family farm, but many of the graves have little headstones, or the headstones are, you can't read them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's lost to time exactly who's in there, But the more I dig, the more interesting, and yeah, it's just the more that trying to cross-check a few things.
Yeah, and I personally have seen some, like, small little cemeteries at the edge of the road, like,
mm-hmm.
driving up that hill. That's really neat to think that, like, that's what it could be. Just, like, that kind of, you know, American history of, like, the industrialization. We got the railroads and stuff, but then the cost that you don't hear about as often. And who did that and, like, what happened to them.
Right, yeah, the
yeah.
logistics. So when we look at the 1855 census, it becomes very obvious that many of them, most of them, did not stay. You know, they went with the work. When they ended up in Belfast, let's see, there was the Genesee Valley Canal went through Belfast. But, you know, they went on to places where there was work, you know, generally as laborers. So we had 590 Irish in 1850 in the town of Alfred. 5 years later, in the 1855 census, there were 43.
Wow. It's a big difference.
Right. So, yeah, so basically 550 Irish left. And I'm not even saying that these four, I don't think these 43, I haven't done the exact tracking, but a few of the women, there were a few Irish-born women who were domestic servants in households.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are still, like, they are family as a farmer, and they might have five kids, but they're not the laborers like they were primarily in 1850.
Yeah, they're not like the men working for the state and the railroad and
right,
all that.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
That's fascinating stuff.
So even in your own family histories, you know, so when your families came, like, what were they doing? Like, what port did they come into? How long did they stay around the port, you know, and then how long before they migrated, you know, sort of west as the general migration?
Yeah.
And what did they do? You know, were they laborers? Were they farmers? Were they machine? Like, so in most of them in Alfred of the 600, well, sorry, of the 300 men were laborers. Let's see. So 329 of them were laborers, but there were four shoemakers. One was a merchant, and it might have been the one that was selling liquor that the priest didn't like. There was one school teacher. So that gives you, like, oh gosh, so did they have their own school for the 130 kids? What are they, you know, and lots of questions related to that. There was three stone cutters, a carpenter, a mason, and two that had no occupation listed. And they might have been, I know one of them was elderly, so I think he was like an elderly father, you know, age, he might have been 75 or something like that, so probably
yeah.
just living with his family.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. Where did you get that, the census there that you have?
I have a subscription to Ancestry.com.
Oh, right.
But these early census records are also available for free. The federal government puts them out.
Oh.
Well, let's see. Federal government, I haven't, because I can get through some Ancestry. There's sort of two different sets when you look at the census records. There's one which has everybody's name, like the individual names listed. And the 1850 census is interesting because it's the first time in the federal census that they list the names of everyone. Before this, they only listed the name of the head of household, and then they would tally marks, okay, there's two females and there's two other males in the household, and, you know, give maybe a little of information. But 1850 is the first time we get names of everybody in the household.
Oh.
But then there's also, if you want to think of it as like a summarizing of the data, there's a completely different set to the 1850 census. So you can look at, you know, in sort of in compilation, in Alfred, how many... you know, residents were there, how many were foreign born, where do they come from, what other states were they born in, and then it just escalates into Allegheny County tabulations, lots of tables and charts, and then to like New York State, lots of data, but there's a lot to learn about it, a lot to parse out, you know, what kind of households, how many lived in brick houses, how many lived in wood framed houses, how many lived in things that would be like shanties.
Yeah, it is a lot of fascinating information you can get from stuff like that.
Yeah, you really can.
Yeah. All right, so the second topic we're going to cover in the spirit of St. Patrick's Day is the old St. Patrick's Day celebration here in Alfred that you were telling me about the other day.
Sure. So students today, we have hot dog day. So I graduated from the university, so I am the class of 1991. So I didn't experience St. Patrick's Day, although we tried, because let's see, I came in 87. So I only missed it by like 2 or 3 years, because it shut down in the mid 80s. So have you guys heard of Shamrock Cafes?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, Hard Rock Cafes?
Yeah.
The Hard Rock Cafe. Right, so that came out like in the late 80s. Like, that was a thing when I was a student here. And so I was in a group that we did a Shamrock Cafe for St. Patrick's Day. So we were trying to replicate Hard Rock Cafe and bring St. Patrick's back Day a little bit. So we had, all sorts of fun things, big event for a couple years. But in 1933... was the first St. Patrick's Day celebration on campus, and it became huge on campus.
I'm sure.
It ran for about 50 years. And the impetus wasn't, hey, we're hoping, there's so many of us that are Irish, let's have an Irish St. Patrick's Day. It was that St. Patrick is the patron saint of ceramic engineering.
Oh.
Right? And we have...
Who knew?
Exactly. Who thinks about these things? All these patron saints. And so a gentleman named John McMahon, so that name might be familiar to some of you, McMahon,
yeah.
The building
is named for John McMahon, who graduated from Alfred in 1923, and then he left, came back, taught, and then went on to become the dean of the school. So he brought with him, he'd seen it someplace else, the idea of having a St. Patrick's Day celebration, to celebrate the engineering program. And let's use it as a recruiting tool.
Oh.
So let's open up our labs. Let's have prospective students and their parents, come to campus that day, do tours, show them, do lots of demonstrations. So what is ceramic engineering? And so that was really the base behind it. But at the same time, let's have some fun with it. So the students did a parade. Over the years, there was always a parade, similar to how in Hot Dog Day we have a parade.
Yeah.
We used to have a big homecoming parade, too, but we don't do that anymore. So a parade, they had teas, they had a big dance. People, dress up, formal dance. They would crown a queen of St. Patrick's Day. There'd be like 5 women candidates. There would be somebody, it would be a senior ceramic engineer, would be secretly chosen, and he would dress up as St. Pat in these robes and a long beard and a staff, and nobody was supposed to know who it was, until the day. They would have beard growing contests because, until the late 60s into the early 70s, facial hair for men, it's not a thing. You have clean shaven, right? You needed to be clean shaven.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a beard growing contest, and so the men would shave, and then they would get, make sure they had a smooth face, get all registered, and then they would grow their beard out for like 6 or 8 weeks. I don't think it was a long time. But during that time, many of them wouldn't leave Alfred. Like, they were not going to take their dates to dinner in Hornell or Wellsville because... they literally would get some dirty looks because here they are out in public with, not a clean shaven face.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So there was an assembly and speeches. We have lots of pictures. We have some good, some film of the early ones in the archives.
In your office, you showed me this pottery thing that someone made.
Yes.
With St. Patrick's Day written on the bottom or carved into it.
Thanks. Yeah, those were called favors. So that every year they would call it a St. Patrick favor. So it was always ceramic, right? Because we're celebrating ceramic engineering.
Yeah.
And it was really wonderful because the intersection of art and engineering. That's what set our program apart to begin with, our College of Ceramics, was the intentional design that art and engineering, they intersect, and there's reasons for artists to understand some of the engineering, structural, mechanical, chemical, all that stuff, issues, while engineers, really, they benefit from knowing some of the artistic side. So this, the favors were designed, art students and engineers together, to design something, you know, a bowl, an ashtray, a mug, salt and pepper shakers. And then they would design it, they would produce them in McMahon, because McMahon had the production facilities and they had a tunnel kiln, and they would glaze them and then they would sell them. And so we have a number of pieces in the archives. And some years they did multiple designs. And it could also, it could be the same design, but they might glaze it in 3 or 4 different colors.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And so you'll see them quite often if you go into antique shops around the area. It's not unusual to find these St. Pat's favors.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Maybe it's like a lucky charm, one might say.
Exactly. And most of them, if you turn them over, as you mentioned, most of them do say, like, you know, St. Pat's, and then they have the year, you know, 64, 59, 45, whatever. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said there were floats, too?
Oh, my gosh. The floats were amazing. Amazing. We had fraternities and sororities still then, right? So we had Greek houses until 2002. And so they could spend weeks making tissue paper flowers. And so, like, to decorate a wagon or, you know, with tissue paper, when you need thousands of them, it takes quite a while.
I'm sure it would.
Yeah. And they oftentimes would have a theme to the parade, too. But, and they would do these floats, like, in secret, because they didn't, you know, you don't want to show anybody else, like, who, what you're making or what you're doing. But really, there's a lot of time and effort and pride, you know, put into these floats. You know, it wasn't just, oh, let's decorate the back of our pickup truck with a few streamers and we'll stand in the back of it.
Like some people do.
These were really, you know, you dressed up and amazing. And, you know, and there was a band, you know, the marching band. And then there was always, it was called the St. Pat's Board. So this was the group of students who organized the entire event. And they would have these corduroy jackets. I have one on display in my office, and they have their name embroidered on it with the year. It's green corduroy, of course. But, there was just so much effort put into St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. So, like many things, right, it changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the exact events they had, you know, I think the tea went away after, you know, probably the first dozen years or so. But, so, as time went on, drinking became more, particularly the Seventh-day Baptists. So Elford was a dry town.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't dry by law, but it was dry because of the Seventh-day Baptists, and they just didn't drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so they were heavily, the Seventh-day Baptist influence was really heavy in the town through like the 1950s. But then as time goes on, their influence lessened. And so drinking, you know, publicly and, you know, but even on campus, right? The drinking age was 18.
Before,
like 1982, right? Most of our students were legal to drink. And so it's not unusual to look through some of the early Fiat newspapers and see keg party in Aid Hall. Or beer blast, you know, in the campus center kind of thing.
Oh,
and
my God.
Like,
oh, imagine
what is
like
that? But, right, it was the thing.
Yeah.
And similar to Hot Dog Day, like, we really sort of have two different hot dog days. We have during the day, which is the family-oriented, let's
right.
raise money for the community.
Yeah.
And then after 5 o'clock, the whole story changes.
It's
<That's>
weird.
So St. Patrick's Day got to be the same way, but a few things happened in the early 80s. A couple of the fraternities weren't getting along with each other, so there was some vandalism between their floats, a little bit of aggression, some fights. The business owners were getting tired of having downtown just sort of be destroyed because of this event. So the local school, Elford Allman, they would shut down for the day. Because so many students would skip school to attend the St. Patrick's Day parade, which I think was usually on a Thursday, that it got to the point that Elford Allman just said, okay, we're not having school today.
Oh, my God.
but then the drinking age changed, right? And so then that becomes a much harder thing for the university to have to cope with. and but just between student behavior and a variety of drinking age factors and time, it was just time for it to go away.
Yeah, it's a shame too, because like that's I remember on our first episode we were talking about like this winter fest that they used to have that also went away.
Yep.
And like St. Patrick's Day thing went away. It's kind of sad to see all the things that just kind of pass on in Ilford history.
Yeah. Moving Day, we used to have another one. Yeah, there were some other traditions, but you know, life changes.
Yeah.
There's a lot more things for people to do and think about now than that used to be.
Yeah. And now we have Hot Dog Day.
And we have Hot Dog Day. Yes. And it's been going strong for 50 years.
Yeah. And let's see. I remember, this might be peddling back a bit, but I thought it was a funny story when you told me. Didn't you say that, like, okay, so the brick burned down?
It had a major fire in 1832, yes.
It, like, lost a floor and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who doesn't know the brick, it's a building on campus.
It's our oldest residence hall.
Yes, and you said that one of the floats the year after it burned down was the brick with smoke coming out.
Yeah,
I thought that was so funny.
It's funny, and we have it on video actually. So for those of you, so Nevins Theater, right? So in the Powell Campus Center where we are, we have Nevins Theater. It's named after Varick and Lillian Nevins. Varick, they both graduated from here. In the 30s, and Varick was an amateur filmmaker, and so he captured a lot of life in the 30s and the 40s in Ilford. So he captured the fire at the brick, and then he captured the St. Patrick's Day parade as well. So yeah, they literally, their float was probably cardboard, you know, maybe with some wood support. You can tell it's sort of hand-painted with all the windows, and then you're being pulled down. But yeah, there's smoke coming out of it, and then I think they're like probably tossing, you know, making it look like they're tossing furniture or clothing or something out.
Wow.
But,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's so out of pocket.
Yeah. Imagine someone did something like that today.
Yeah.
I think people would.
They would, 100%.
So no one was hurt. No one was hurt in the brick fire, so I think they were able to make a little bit more light of it.
Yeah.
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 I'm sure kids saw it was the funniest thing back in the day.
Yeah.
And before we end, I would actually like to look up other things that St. Patrick is the patron saint of. Does anyone have any guesses on what else he could be?
Oh.
Oh, boy. Snakes.
I was going to say.
Or not snakes.
I don't know, it's either he is or isn't with that one. The Shamrock Shake.
But the patron saints, I mean, they can be the patron saints of six different things that have nothing to do with each other oftentimes. So.
Oh, I'm not finding a simple list.
Totally hard to guess.
Okay, engineers. Those afraid of snakes.
Oh, okay.
Afraid of snakes. Okay. This one I'm finding says Ireland and Nigeria. Which, I don't know what the story would be there. I'm finding another thing that is saying the patron saint of immigrants, or migrants. Which would make sense because of all the immigration stuff going on there. So, and engineers, because he oversaw the construction of churches in Ireland, because that was a big thing, like bringing Christianity to. Yeah. Hmm. So, on that note, I hope you guys have new ideas on how to celebrate your St. Patrick's Day. Maybe get into engineering.
Become a ceramic engineer.
And be scared of snakes, guys.
No, leave them alone.
Yeah. And pinch anyone wearing orange. They are the snakes. All right. I think that's all we have for this special episode. Have a great day.
And happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And be safe.
Yes.